Welcome to We Are Here, a Keystone Edge podcast starring Pennsylvanians making their mark. This series has been created in partnership with PA Humanities, an organization dedicated to sparking civic engagement and building community. We hope these conversations will do the same. In this episode, we're heading to Millvale, a town of about 4,000 people right over the 40th Street Bridge from Pittsburgh. As its name implies, Millvale was a factory town, home to iron manufacturers, stoneworks, breweries, and lumber mills. Like many towns centered around these industries, Millvale struggled in the middle of the 20th century, losing over 50% of its population. But it held on to the important things, a sense of community and an important piece of its history. St. Nicholas Roman Catholic Church was the first Croatian parish in America. It is also home to a remarkable treasure, one that has been carefully preserved by a dedicated group of Pennsylvanians. They're part of an exciting new energy bubbling up in this riverside town.
My name is Anna Deering, and I'm the executive director of the Society to Preserve the Millvale Murals of Moksovanka.
And who is Moksovanka?
Moksovanka was a Croatian immigrant who was invited in 1937, after he had recently immigrated to the United States, to paint the interior of a Croatian Catholic church in Millvale, which is just a small borough outside of Pittsburgh.
And what makes these murals special and worthy of an organization dedicated to their preservation?
Well, I think that I would start by saying that they aren't your typical church murals. And the way that they came about, you know, the church was built in 1900 and had a fire in 1921. And so it was rebuilt in 1922 and sort of created this canvas for a new set of murals. The ones before had been traditional. And the priest at the time, Father Jagar, really set the tone. I mean, he wanted to do something special. He took his time finding his artist, because what he really wanted to do was tell the story of the immigrant congregation that he ministered to. And so he waited until he found an artist who really had a knack for telling stories through his art. So what you get on the walls of St. Nicholas is almost the entire interior painted by the artist alone, over a period of 24 weeks. And while alongside sort of traditional religious images like the Pietà and the crucifixion, and you have then immigrant mother raises her sons for American industry and Croatian mother raises her son for war. And so within the context of 1937 and 1941, you have the artist painting really history on the walls and then putting the congregation within the context of that history. And also, he didn't reserve his own commentary about what was going on at that time. You see some real heavy conversation around social and economic injustice.
So I think in what you just said, this is implied, but how do these historic murals speak to our current time? Why are they still relevant? And how do you work to get people excited about them, especially young people? When kids today, they might hear historic church murals and not, you know, leap out of their seats. But how do you get them out of their seats?
We actually do it by bringing these timeless themes. So these themes of social justice, immigrant experience, war. I mean, there are battlefield scenes in these murals. And we bring them to all audiences with sort of connecting them to what's happening in the world today. So if you can talk about the war in Ukraine and you can stand underneath Christ on the battlefield and Mary on the battlefield and have a pretty provocative conversation about what was happening in 1941 and what's happening right now in 2022. Or you can talk about what we're seeing in the sort of disparity among classes or, you know, economic disparities, and have the capitalist sitting at his very fancy table, you know, contrasting with a group of immigrants eating soup and bread in front of the mills. And one of the things that we do is we do through our education program is that we bring them into the space to sort of think about sort of how does art make change, or how can you use art to start a conversation, a hard conversation. We have to start with the murals. Vanka did a lot of the heavy lifting for us because these are very unusual paintings. They're larger than life. They aren't portraits. their representative figures. And so you have in one corner, you have an angel with a gas mask on with a bloody sword. And that is the angel of injustice or justice corrupted. And in justice's hands next to a bloody sword, you have unbalanced scales where gold is outweighing bread. And so that in itself brings up a number of conversations that you could start. And so when younger audiences come into the murals or come into the church, they are immediately, I think, drawn to the fact that these aren't traditional church murals, that they are sort of radical in their own way. I think that they can identify with what they're seeing on the walls more than they could if it was more of a traditional sort of presentation.
I want to make sure that we are talking about Millvale and what these murals mean to the town and the identity of the town. And to do that, I would love to bring in Scott.
I'm Scott Wolovich. I'm the executive director of New Sun Rising. And New Sun Rising is a community economic development nonprofit that supports other nonprofits, social enterprises, collaboratives, really to help communities both lead and benefit from the change that they like to see. My family roots go way back. Some of the immigrant references that Anna made were my Polish grandfather, who was the first of his family to come into the States and landed in Millvale. He and my father, as well as his brothers and sisters, really got established in the Millvale community, and St. Nicholas was their home. And so my father, he went to grade school there. A lot of my relatives and family, you know, really practiced their faith in the church. And, you know, I was one of those, as Anna said, you know, from the time I was baptized, but even in my younger years, you know, sitting in that church and looking up and in awe at these murals. At that time, they were still covered in soot. They weren't lit in the most beautiful way that Anna and her team have been able to really literally shine light on these themes and these stories. And so there was so much mystery in those walls that's been really interesting for me to see literally and figuratively uncovered over the past decade.
Do you remember having a childhood sense that this is not what most churches look like? Were you aware that this was something a little different?
Oh, absolutely. And in the most fantastic way, in that it was a really a curious and creative distraction, I think, to experience the murals of Maksymanka, to be immersed in that art and to really be transported to that time.
How does the Millvale of your youth compare to the Millvale of today?
There's been such a transformation. When my grandfather and my great aunts and uncles, they often talked about, like a lot of small towns that, you know, still were employed by industry at that time, you know, very thriving business district and social life, that all but left the town. You know, when I was younger, coming to Millvale was very much high vacancies, not a lot of destination, a lot of older population that, you know, had continued to live there. But over time, there's been a real resurgence of the community. And a lot of that's happened around a broader approach to the development, which has looked at these lenses of systems of food, energy, air, water, a lot of these social systems, if you will. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways, an inclusive and welcoming approach that also are things that you find in Vanka's murals in terms of the immigrant experience and really tying us to our roots, but also being practical about the world that we're living in today.
My impression, and I'm not a native Pittsburgher, but I've been here now over 20 some years, is that these murals seem to be exactly where they should be. From my experience with the Millvale community and what's happening there right now, it just seems like a, you know, an enduring connection that there is to the past, present, and future of the borough.
I really want to talk a little bit more about that connection and what impact the murals have on the identity of this town. Do you feel like it's something that you mentioned Millvale and people know about these murals? And also, how do you connect the energy of these murals to this renaissance in the town? Do you guys do any work to try to encourage people, okay, when you're done here, go to a local brewery. When you're done here, go take a walk. You know, don't stop here. Go deeper here in Millvale.
I would say that we're absolutely trying to do that. We often say, make it a day in Millvale. When you're done with an hour tour at the murals, what else could you do? Or we just highlight other activities that are going on in Millvale. Up until recently, and I'd say probably up until the last 5 years, and the real work of the conservation becoming, you know, the murals becoming visible really is what has happened, is that the murals were always and continue to be described as a hidden treasure. A lot of people know St. Nicholas because they see that church up on the hill on 28, which is a well-traveled route from Pittsburgh out to the suburbs. But I think if you asked anyone about Millvale, the first notice would be the French bakery or the really busy brewery, you know. But in a way, that's changing a little bit in the last 5 years, where we really are seeing a big jump in our visitor numbers. We really feel that we have and want to be part of the community. And as I said, just because the themes and so much of what's in the murals resonates with what's happening in Millvale, that we feel that connection and we're growing that connection.
If I could add on to that, I think that one of the secret ingredients, I would say, of Millvale's renaissance or you know, renewed energy has been the very reciprocal nature of the different partners and people that are part of that, different institutions, different venues, businesses, nonprofits, community members. There are times where we each need to do our own thing. There's times where autonomy is important. And then there's times where we get behind each other and we do, you know, larger, more catalytic types of things. Increasingly, you know, I myself can say that as people are coming to Millvale to experience things that maybe New Sun Rising's involved with or other partners involved with, and they're exploring or doing work that's related to the themes of the mural, I'm always asking, you know, have you been to St. Nicholas? Have you seen these murals? And I can tell you over time that the answers have become more frequently yes, or that there is a greater awareness. I think we all sort of see ourselves as on-ramps into maybe a broader Millvale experience. For such a small town, it really does have a lot of destinations that are unique in the region. And certainly St. Nicholas is a big part of that.
One aspect of our personality is Moxo Vanka off the walls, which is really representative of our community engagement efforts. And part of that is just that we realized a long time ago that we couldn't be just a preservation project. We couldn't just preserve the murals and stay inside the church and be happy with that. So we actually are involved with Millvale in putting on, down in one of the main roads in Millvale, North Avenue, we have a gallery exhibition of original works of art that are based on the themes, but done by BIPOC artists. So a contemporary spin on those themes of justice, injustice, immigrant experience, and motherhood, which are really the primary themes within the murals. So that sort of puts us immediately sort of in the middle of Millvale, literally in the middle of Millvale. But it's a chance for us to bring in students or kids from the Millvale Community Library to show their art or to have art making in the space that, again, connects the local community to the murals, but also shows that we have another dimension to our programs and another concern, which is the community.
You're listening to We Are Here from Keystone Edge, produced in partnership with PA Humanities, which believes in putting people first. Their work champions the humanities across Pennsylvania, centering growth, equity, and community as a pathway to positive, lasting change. Learn more at pahumanities.org.
Are there any other big programming successes you guys have had? Any sort of specific strategies that have really worked in terms of expanding the reach of this asset and getting people excited about it, bringing more people in?
Yeah, a couple things. Like everybody else, we went virtual. During COVID, we did virtual programs called Table Talks, where we focused in some instances on exactly something about the murals, the history, the Vanka collection, things like that. But then we also collaborated with an organization at Pitt called Hiccup to bring in and have conversations about mural arts as a way to talk about social issues of the day and to sort of bring in an international voice and diversity. And that's really one big piece of all of this, is that we're trying to find a lot of, as Scott said, on-ramps into bringing more perspectives into our interpretation of the murals too. So one of the other things too that we did during COVID that was a great opportunity was creating a 360 virtual tour of the murals, which is coming into its own sort of as a combined marketing tool, as well as an educational tool, because we're using it in our educational outreach programs with cyber educators, as well as just any groups that maybe can't get to the murals for one reason or another. And so they use the virtual tour and can really kind of go deep on a theme or a mural or, you know, an issue. So it's that opportunity to customize your mural experience too.
Do you ever feel that the church of it all and the fact that this isn't a religious place of worship is ever a barrier to people?
I would say that that is something that people have even expressed, you know, and part of it is that they don't, if they're not Catholic or if they have a, you know, a different perspective, they just presume that they won't find anything relevant to them inside the church. And so a lot of what we've been doing and a lot of, you know, sort of incorporating that certain murals into, you know, very visual conversations about what's happening in the world or just being better about communicating and showing the images, we find people saying, hey, wait a second, you know, that image of justice or that image, A, what's that doing in a church? And B, I need to go see that for myself. We're just getting an increasing number of referrals from unexpected sources. So I think people are finding people in their own networks who they wouldn't expect to go see murals in a Catholic church saying, these are something you can't miss, you know, when you come to Pittsburgh, this is something you have to see. And I think that other piece of that that I probably didn't, you know, sort of go into too much is the fact that this really is a historical piece. This really captures a time in Pittsburgh's history and this region's history that is good for storytelling. So when we look at who comes, it's somebody who is interested in history, someone who's interested in art, someone who's interested in religion, someone who's interested in social justice causes. You know, you just have all of these folks finding themselves in the murals. And part of what we really spent a lot of time doing and making space for in our interpretive planning process is ways to bring in new perspectives and to check ourselves on how we're telling these stories a little bit. I looked at the calendar the other day and sort of shocked myself that I've been associated with this project for over 12 years now. They really suck you in and don't let go. And part of the reason that I'm feeling so energized after all these years about, you know, another half of those murals to conserve, another half to light, more audiences to reach, is that I've been getting such new and interesting takes on the murals. And so, you know, someone else's read of them is just so inspiring or challenging, or, you know, it can be something different. And we're getting that perspective from such a range of ages now. Some things that happen now at the murals through our, let's say, family programs, for instance, is that we do postcards. We say, write a postcard to somebody who's not here, who you think might enjoy the murals. And so a father might start a postcard to a relative that their child has never met. And then they get to tell them why they're writing the postcard to that relative because of the meaning that it would have. We've been working with the Light Education Initiative, doing some collaborative programming where you're talking, you know, in their case about genocide issues. And then we're talking about our themes and Holocaust and everything. And so what one of our local schools did was, and it brought a high school group to the murals. And instead of bringing a class, like an art class or a history class, it brought two representatives from all of the leadership organizations within the school. So you had two people from, you know, government, and you had two people from the Gay Straight Alliance, and you had two people from the Black Student Union. And so after experiencing the murals, after sitting around and eating lunch together and having some, you know, conversations after making some zines, then you kind of regroup and say, okay, well, let's talk about, and this gets back to your question, Lee, let's talk about how do these murals and these themes relate to some things you're experiencing in school right now or in your lives right now. And then you get this very interesting dialogue going between these students who might not ever sit together in a room and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I could, I really love the, I love the dynamic nature of the murals. And as Anna said, they do suck you in, and it's not one of these creative experiences that you see once and it's a static experience. I mean, one of my favorite things to do is to introduce people to the murals, and by experiencing it with someone who's never been there, it does always bring something new into the conversation and to your perspective of what you're seeing and how others are experiencing it. So it's a very evergreen and dynamic experience.
And now I hope everyone who's listening right now does a quick search and goes and looks at what these murals actually, the visual impact they have, because they're really interesting and really remarkable. And I think even after listening to this conversation, maybe not what you'd expect. And then, you know, I of course hope that people go and see them in person, but you should at least do a quick Google, unless you're driving, save it for later, but definitely, you know, make sure you get a sense of what we're talking about here.
Can I tell you one thing about them, Lee?
Sure.
That I always want to get in, so I apologize for interrupting, is that what people might be surprised about, besides how short a time it took Vanka to paint them, which was 24 weeks in two big chunks, is the fact that these are water-sensitive murals. If you rubbed hard enough, they'd come right off the wall. They are not true fresco paintings, which gives us another side to us, which is the science side of conservation and the opportunity to introduce that to audiences too, and kids and careers and other things like that. But it's pretty cool. We use nanoparticles and everything else. It's really awesome.
Very cool. So we talked briefly about the pandemic, but I would love to dip a little bit back into sort of late pandemic life in Millvale with the murals. What does their role look like in recovery? How are you guys adjusting your programming? How are you guys kind of coming back to life?
We're continuing to do our virtual programming. So we're doing those programs, those table talks. We haven't done as many as we did during COVID times. A lot of organizations, though, the in-person piece, especially arts organizations, the in-person piece was the killer, you know, when you didn't have audiences coming in. So we absolutely had the same experience everyone else did in 2020, where we lost 75% of our revenue and our audience from the tour program, which had been this, you know, sort of upward trajectory for us. 2020 was supposed to be another big year. So we pivoted and we did, you know, the virtual programming. We took some of our educational programs online, put them on the website, and we tried to have some humor about it. So if you look on our website, or if you saw some of our social media, we put masks on some of the murals when we were able to reopen and were we able to bring back. We did, you know, all the precautions and kept our groups lower than 25 for a long time. It's really only been after the first quarter of 2022 that we really are now picking up steam again and really almost back to normal. And getting a lot more, I think, inquiries for private tours as well as our public tours, because I think people want to have experiences. They want to get outside. So we're hoping to make as much of that as we can going forward.
Let's talk about the future. What does the future hold for these murals? What does the future hold for Millvale? What do you see for this town 10, 15, 20 years down the road?
One of the things that happened during the pandemic, and actually this, I think, Anna, this may be a shared experience. One of the last times we gathered in person before we all sheltered was kicking off planning process that Anna had referenced earlier. And so serendipitously, you know, as communities were looking inwards, I think the Mural Society was doing similar planning and was positioned well, I think, to emerge from this, having done a lot of that planning work for the murals with this planning process that now we're seeing, and I'm sure Anna can expand upon this more, the fruits of that labor in terms of some of these new initiatives and more community engagement and more modularity in terms of how and where people can experience the murals. In terms of Millvale itself, we've continued to see significant growth both in the commercial and residential interest in the community. There's very few vacancies in the commercial district at this point. One of the shared interests of a lot of the people who put elbow grease into the benefit of the community is that we like to throw a party in Millvale. And sometimes it's self-serving because we all like to join in and have fun along the way. The music festival and other things have been able to return and really seen numbers and participation that actually have exceeded, you know, pre-pandemic numbers. Like a lot of communities, probably 10 years ago, you know, was mostly about attracting businesses and people and really trying to identify or produce an identity, you know, for the community that folks may respond to. And it's just wild, you know, when you get what you ask for, and now the challenges change where you're thinking about displacement and affordable housing and affordable commercial real estate. And, you know, how can we retain the character, the culture, the history that this community is built upon in a way that honors its past, but also ushers in a new future. A lot of Millvale's future is built upon this eco-district framework that we talked about, which really looks at more sustainability, resilience, equity, and climate as sort of the guide rails in which we're trying to make decisions. Millvale's a very flood prone community. And so there's always this threat of large scale flooding that does happen almost on an annual basis, unfortunately. And so we're, you know, 1 foot in the present, but always thinking about the future. But it's a challenge, just different challenges.
And those murals are water soluble. You just told me. Now I'm worried.
Fortunately, they're on the hill.
So. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
If the Vanka murals are flooded, we all better find an ark somewhere. We're in trouble.
Well, Scott, thank you for reminding me, because that's right. We kicked off our interpretive planning process right as everything started to shut down. And that really was something that we did do during COVID. We made use of the time. We did the interpretive planning, which really sets the tone for our programming. And it kind of gives us the framework that we're working with for growth 5 to 10 years down the road, you know, visitor experience, et cetera. We also did a full deep dive on the structure itself, on the church. We had support to do that, to take a look at what kind of shape is the building in, you know, and what does it need. And then we did a look also at the next phase of conservation. We count 25 murals in the church, and we've done half. So we've done 12. The next round is really all the ceiling murals and the high murals that no one has ever touched in the last, you know, since they were painted.
Okay, last question. Do either of you have a favorite mural and why?
Oh, I'm going to let Scott go first.
I really can't say that there's one mural. There are elements in many murals that are my favorites. There's one Croatian peasant in one of the altar murals that actually reminds me of a profile of my brother. So I always look for him. I find myself drawn to details in many murals that have me coming back to them and looking for them.
That was a wonderful and thoughtful answer. But Anna, I'm hoping that you will have a specific mural that you can tell us that is your number one favorite that people can look for when they go to Millvale.
Well, I've actually always been really drawn to Mati 1941, which is Mother Croatia on the cross. It's one of the bigger vertical murals. But I also have a deep just sort of yearning to see the hand of God on the Old Testament wall cleaned, because I have a feeling it's going to be the most beautiful mural in the church, because it's the hand of God is carrying a tablet to Moses in the Old Testament wall, but the hand is being carried by angels. And Vanka, the one thing, go back to details Scott was talking about, there are so many different types of angels in this church that you really need an encyclopedia of angels to come in to sort of identify them. So Vanka really did a beautiful job. And I think it's one of the most elegant and just, I don't know, just gorgeous murals that has yet to be uncovered, but probably will be my favorite once it is uncovered. So I have to say.
So people have been there have reason to come back once there's, more of these murals are restored to their former glory.
When they're cleaned, it is like seeing them like you've never seen them before, because, in Christ on the Battlefield, for instance, there are grain in the wood we couldn't see before we cleaned it. There were veins in Christ's arms that you couldn't see until we cleaned it.
I remember the first time I saw the Justice Injustice, the side panels that are really floor to ceiling, just larger than life. When I saw them cleaned, and they weren't even lit at this time the first time I saw them, it actually felt to me as almost as if they were backlit stained glass. I mean, the colors were so vivid, and it was just such a different experience from, again, Scott at the age of six staring up at these things. So like Anna, I just can't wait to see what gets uncovered as these additional murals get cleaned and restored.
That's it for the premiere episode of We Are Here. If you have thoughts on the conversation you just heard, or ideas for what we should cover in upcoming episodes, please visit our website, KeystoneEdge.com. Or reach us via our social channels. We're @KeystoneEdge on Instagram and Twitter. Until next time.